got a question. What's your favorite book slash movie slash song, whatever? And
that's
why do you like
question.
It? Yeah, I know, but I'm Uno reversing you.
Well, I really like... I'm trying to think of things I've read recently. Recently, I read this book by Rachel Cusk called Second Place, which is really good. I don't know. I think I like things that are kind of like allegorical or archetypal, maybe. Mm-hmm. Like I'm rereading East of Eden, which is one of my favorite books, and it's like a retelling of Genesis. I just told you when you got here that I got the Karl Ove Nausgaard book about angels. So I think that's, I don't know, a general theme, a general commonality, I guess, among some of the books I like. Yeah. I like family sagas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What about you?
That's cool. Well, I was thinking about it, too, and I haven't read... I can't read. Yeah, I actually haven't read a novel before. I haven't read, like, a contemporary novel in a bit, but I've been reading a lot of... I'm reading a book on the history of Christianity right now. And like, I don't know, I was reading some like folklore from a book that, Ashley lent me, and I've been rereading the Gospels actually too.
Damn.
So yeah. But I think, so I'm going to have my surgery soon, and I think in the recovery, I'm going to watch a lot of movies. I think I'm going to do some film buffery actually.
What's your favorite movie?
I'll get back to you on that. I don't have like a favorite movie that sticks out to me. I always used to say the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which
all
I think
right.
might still be true. I love those
yeah,
movies.
Yeah, just embrace it.
Yeah. But I can't remember the last like film that I saw that I really felt very good about in like a, it stuck with me kind of way, which is such a Philistine thing to say, but you know,
sure,
oh well, yeah, I'll think about it more. But yeah. I know a good movie when I see one. I think I've actually pretty discerning taste when it comes to movies.
All right, name one other good movie.
One other, like Challenger.
No, I knew you were gonna say Challengers.
I liked the part where the boys kissed each other.
I liked the part when we were the ball.
Yeah, that, when we were the ball, that was extremely good.
People who haven't seen Challengers are screaming yeah, right now. Yeah, they're saying, shut up about Challengers. We get it.
Yeah.
Movie of the summer.
It is.
Remember last year when everyone was talking about Barbie?
Oh, yeah, I saw that movie. That was not very good, though.
We can't do this again.
Yeah, I know. We can't do that again. I think it's been enough time that you're allowed to say it wasn't very good.
Yeah, I just am... whatever. Yeah, we can't
no,
do it.
I know.
Anyway.
Wait, no, now I feel like an absolute dunce. What was the last, like, there have been good films I've seen, actually, recently that I, like, connected with. You know, actually, controversial take, I really liked Poor Things. I saw that.
That is a controversial
take. Yeah, people didn't like it. I liked it, though.
I wasn't...
Yeah.
It was okay. I liked when she was eating the pastries.
Oh, yeah.
That I found relatable.
Okay.
When she was
eating poor pastries is good.
We can't talk about these movies that no one has seen.
Well, people have seen Poor Things. There was a lot of discourse about it as well. People didn't like it.
Yeah.
Some people did like it. I thought it was actually kind of good.
So why do you think you liked it?
I thought it was pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it like caricatured disgusting men in like a pretty effective way.
Oh, I did love the Mark Ruffalo character.
Mark Ruffalo's character was excellent. I think he actually kind
of
carried the movie. He definitely carried the movie.
I remember he said something when he was like, oh, shit. Never mind. I don't remember it. But he had some like one-liners that were so funny.
Yeah.
And he did them so well.
He did. And when he did his, he like was really bad at a British accent, mm-hmm. which I thought was so charming too. Like I really found that excellent. That he would yell and it would just go away. He'd be American again. And
very
so.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else. I've seen actually a good number. I saw Civil War, the new A24 movie. That one was bad. That one was straight up like...
You told us it was good.
No, wait, that wasn't me.
Oh my god, whatever. We can't do this
okay,
again.
Because
I remember we were talking to you about it and we said someone was telling us and you were like, that was me.
No, whoa, that's crazy. No, I didn't think it was very good at all.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, it was like just politically confused, which it... Not every movie has to have politics, but that one certainly purported to, I think, and then didn't.
That's fair.
Yeah.
A note for the listeners, I'm going to get up and close the windows, but if you've heard children screaming,
Yeah,
it's not us.
Yeah.
It's the school across the street, but okay.
I've not been reading White Noise, actually.
Just stop reading it.
I know, I haven't. I need to give it back to you. It's on like a pile of books.
Oh, you're just not going to finish it?
Maybe I will.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay. You shouldn't finish it.
I just find him very difficult. I feel like I don't like the man.
Sure.
Don DeLillo. And the character that is also him.
Mr. Don DeLillo.
Mr. Don DeLillo, yeah. And his Junior. Character, Mr. Hitler. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, I just find it hard to connect with. I have trauma about movies because my dad made me watch like a bunch of like film, like, mm-hmm. you know, in italics when I was a kid. So now it's hard for me to watch film. So when people are like, what's your favorite movie? I say, wow. Like, trigger warning next time, please.
See, I have the opposite experience where, what did I grow up watching? Every sports movie ever. Field of Dreams.
Okay.
Heard of it?
Yeah. yeah. Actually, my dad likes that movie, too.
As a sportsman. Oh, as a sportsman. Have you seen Jerry Maguire with Tom Cruise? Rewatched it the other day. Very bad. Very bad movie.
Yeah. You guys are just on a Tom Cruise kind of kick.
Totally. Yeah. okay, what about songs or musical artists?
I'm really into Espresso.
Are you really?
No, not really.
Whatever.
It's been playing everywhere though. I think it's fine. I don't know. You know my taste. I like country music.
We're doing a podcast.
Yeah. No,
I know. I'm not just asking for my benefit.
Yeah, I haven't like explored in a little bit. Like I had like a really intense like getting into music phase like 2 years ago, and I feel like I'm still like benefiting on the fruits of that period of my life, which has mostly yielded, I don't know, just a bunch of like indie rock and country music, which is what I tend to stick to.
Mm-hmm.
I keep trying to have like a rap arc, like I'm gonna get into rap.
That's such a crazy thing to say.
It's really hard though.
For you, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sick. All right, cool.
Yeah, yeah. I made my Instagram bio, I keep my head up, my bread up, I won't let up, which is a line from Ice Spice's rap on her collab with on Karma with Taylor Swift, which is one of like the worst best songs ever. Like, it's terrible, but I really like it.
I've not heard that song.
It's extremely
good. I'm not gonna listen to it.
You should. What about you? I don't even know what you're listening to right now.
Right now I'm listening to Chapel Roan. Are you familiar?
Yeah, I am, actually.
Oh, it's because I like to put on her album and then just go for a run.
Yeah. It
gets me really hyped.
Yeah. Yeah, she's got, like, kind of poppy, disco-y kind of...
Mm-hmm. Very, like, 80s pop.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, interesting lyrics that are kind of, like, shocking in some ways. And I love that.
I've seen a lot of her TikToks, too, that get reposted. She's kind of a crazy gal.
She is. I think she's a star. I like Chapel Roan right now. That's who I've been listening to. Oh, new Camera Obscura album.
Okay.
Yeah. Very good.
I still haven't listened to the new Vampire Weekend album.
Me neither.
Damn.
Sorry to our listeners.
Yeah.
You know who you are. Yeah. But anyway, okay, we've got our media wrecks of the summer.
Right.
Why are we starting with this?
Right. Well, we're starting with this because we're talking about how culture is dead. That's probably why I haven't engaged with anything.
Yeah, that's why.
Nothing interesting has been produced in the last 60 years.
So what are you doing then if you're not engaging with media?
No, I definitely am. I mean...
You just... Oh,
the rice is...
Right. The rice.
Wait, that's my favorite song. Yeah. I mean, I do engage with media a lot, I guess. Okay, so we're both motivated by a sense that a lot of popular media, at least, and maybe even a good amount of indie media too, has sort of like become very samey, very like, you know, just monotonous, repetitive, hitting on the same themes, kind of replaying things. I guess it's kind of telling that Chapel Roan, who's like huge right now, is kind of just doing 80s pop again. And I think a lot of people are sort of recycling 80s vibes and have been for the past few years.
Mm-hmm. Stranger Things.
Yeah, totally. And like musically too. I feel like that's pretty popular. Country music has is largely 80s-y, except for like some pop country that does like terrible rap stuff. But even a lot of like the indie country artists that I like, the sort of like outlaw people, are doing like, you know, similar sort of, I guess, homages to like 70s, 80s, like non-big record label country. Thinking of like Tyler Childers or like, I don't know, Sturgill Simpson, those sorts of guys. So what's going on? That's the question that maybe we started with here.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I just thought of for some reason is this was like kind of a popular question, like probably in the past like 5 years of literary criticism or like at conferences and stuff, is about relatability, because a lot of, and I don't remember if we've talked about this on the pod before, but like a lot of students are really obsessed with like whether or not a text is relatable. And that's something that I've been thinking a lot about, just in terms of like fiction and its purpose, or like media and its purpose. And I have this Fran Lebowitz quote I want to share that I think is so fire.
It's heat.
She says, a book is not supposed to be a mirror, it's supposed to be a door.
Right.
Good for her.
Yeah.
So true.
I want y'all to sit with that for a second. Okay. That was long
enough. That's enough.
Yeah. You can pause
stand
it.
Stand up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like the issue with so much media nowadays is that people want mirrors. Everything is just like, I don't know, not to like shit on Taylor Swift immediately, but like, ooh, I'm sad, he left his sweater here. And it's like, damn, she's sad because he left his sweater there. But then people will try to be like, well, the sweater is a metaphor, but it just like doesn't hit. I don't know. And maybe I'm just being a hater. I also just made up that Taylor Swift line, so maybe she isn't like that.
Well, I think, but she is like that. And I think like, this is the other thing we're noticing, is a lot of like song lyrics, a lot of like popular music is really literal this way. I think like the so let me just read some of the lyrics to Stick Season by Noah Kahan, who's like a popular artist just in general, but he started in the sort of like alt folk domain, but mostly on TikTok. Okay, what does he say here? As you promised me that I was more than all the miles combined, you must have had yourself a change of heart like halfway through your drive, because your voice trailed off exactly as you passed the exit sign, kept on driving straight, and left our future to the right. Which, by the way, we were talking about this earlier, and I don't understand like the geometry of that. Like, she passed his exit.
But she's only halfway.
But she's only halfway, yeah. And also, like, why, you know, he's still in the car with her now. But where is the line?
No, he's not in the car, because aren't they on the phone?
Oh.
Wait, are they? What if the issue is that we can't read?
Yeah, I don't think he.
Oh, for some reason I thought they were on the phone. Yeah.
But I love this part, and I love Vermont, but it's the season of the sticks, which is just like, something about that. And I saw your mom, she forgot that I existed, and it's half my fault. But I just like to play the victim. I'll drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas. And like the line, I'll drink alcohol till my friends come home for Christmas, has been stuck in my head for days.
It's like so AI pretending to be human.
It is. It's just really funny. Well, it reminds me of just like being like a freshman in the dorm. People are like, you guys have alcohol? You know, like, not like.
Why do you say alcohol like that? I don't
know. Because it's unpracticed in the impression.
Right.
You're not like, do you guys have like beer, or do you guys like have any vodka or something? It's like, do you guys have alcohol, just of any variety, please? Like, just and like to put that in a song feels very like, okay, like this, like real drinking heads, like, real boozers, you know.
It's very hello fellow kids.
Yeah, we're naming the kind of alcohol that we're drinking, you know, or the kind of liquor or spirit, even, you know.
Not, spirit. Yeah, we're not saying like peach burnettes.
Yeah. You guys, are we drinking alcohol tonight? Like,
right.
Anyway, but it's very like literal and dorky in a way that I think is emblematic of the trend that we're pointing to, which is this kind of like thin, you know, relatable, you know, and maybe it's broad to be relatable. The lyrics are vague to also be relatable, right? Like, you know, just like talking about like, I don't know, your mom doesn't remember me, where, you know, there's
he's a drive. Sad he's sad. Her mom doesn't remember him.
Yeah. It's like simultaneously literal and specific, but in a way that is thin enough to be relatable. Maybe it is something like, I think that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so use this term thin, mm-hmm. Which I wanted to talk about, this like idea of like thin versus thick description. Yeah. And like, you know, literary theory. I actually don't know if it's like literary theory or what, but like thin description is, you know, like observation of acts, behavior. So like just like describing like what is present. Like, you know, there's my phone sits on the table. This isn't really like, giving you any insight into anything. It's just like an observation. Whereas like thick description is more about like interpretation, metaphor, and yeah, it seems like we're just in an immediate era of like thin description, or like, and I have a theory that it's because of like TikTok and like the contentification of everyday life. I don't know, like I see so much about, maybe I'm going on a tangent, but like people will say like, oh, romanticize your life. And mm-hmm. by this, they mean just like record everything you do.
And buy stuff.
And buy stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just feels like these things that are supposed to be thick description end up very like thin. Like to give an example with like TikTok and romanticizing your life. Or like, I think we talked in the last episode, or I don't know, some recent-ish episode about like categorizing yourself as like a type of girl. Like, the one last summer was like, oh, I'm a tomato girl. And it's like, okay, does that just mean you like to wear red? Like, I like to wear red. My cool red frog shirt I have. Does that mean I'm a tomato girl?
Yeah, I didn't know I didn't hear anything about this.
You didn't hear about tomato girl?
No.
Okay, funny. What about like coquette? Are you...
Yeah, I don't know. I do know what a coquette is. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, yeah. Or I'm trying to think of... Oh, wait, I talked about like mob wife aesthetics.
Oh, yeah. You know what girls are calling themselves now as yappers? Have you seen this?
Yeah. Because I like that, because I love to yap.
Yeah.
But like, so I think like, all of these are good descriptions of, this is supposed to like get at something like metaphorical, but it ends up just being a very like thin description. Like, to be a tomato girl is nothing more than like, you know, aesthetics, or like, you know, aesthetic signifiers like clothes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. I was trying to think, I saw... I saw like a, I follow, this Instagram, site called The Swaddle, which is like an Indian indie, like magazine kind of thing that just reports on like culture and stuff. I don't know.
In India,
but also they do just like online culture stuff, which is, it's just fun to see like another perspective on this stuff. And the like Reel was complaining, or not complaining, just like talking about how cafes in Indian cities are all starting to look the same. And I was like, oh my God, over there too? Like, that sucks.
Dude, it's true.
And they did a really nice explanation, which is just that like, as the point of cafes becomes more to be Instagrammable, right? The like aesthetic is less about like the organically produced like cultural objects of a particular place, and more about just what's going to trend on that, on the sort of like thin you know, layer of scrolling through this sort of thing on social media.
Yeah, I actually listened to a podcast about this very thing a few weeks ago, about like cafes in particular, and it's sort of like a feedback loop where like cafe, I don't know where it starts, but like cafe becomes Instagrammable, or like, you know, photographable. People post on Instagram, you know, people see it because it's on Instagram, people go there, therefore they have like incentive to like more. So it's like, and
like feedback loops.
Yeah, and I think it just like flattens culture. I think the podcast, I don't remember what podcast I was listening to, but I think they had Kyle Chayka on, you know, this guy, he talks about like, he I think he works with The Dirt newsletter.
Okay.
But he has this book about, yeah, like algorithmic culture, I think. I don't know, I might be completely citing this wrong, but Yeah, so I think this is carried over into, like, media, and totally. I don't know if I would say, like, books necessarily. Well, maybe some books. yeah, we'll get to that. In, like, movies and, music.
Definitely. I think that's right. So I think maybe now is, like, a good time to introduce, like, the sort of set piece of this discussion, which is the second chapter from the book Amusing Ourselves to Death by Neil Postman. The second chapter is called Media as Epistemology. So the book Amusing Ourselves to Death, it's just about it's from like the 70s, but it's about how like TV rots your brain, basically. That's very uncharitable, but that's the basic thought, is like he's sort of explaining the deterioration of American intellectual culture as a result of TV.
I do think you're misrepresenting him kind of purposefully, because he says in his book, I'm not trying to say that media changes your bodies or brains in a Marshall McLuhan way. You're just like, that's what he says. It is about the culture, but I like
it's
that
about the culture
way of framing it.
Yes. I don't know if he's beating those allegations, to be honest.
No, he's certainly not.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, he doesn't want to make as strong of a claim, maybe, as Marshall McLuhan, but I think he ends up saying something adjacent to... It's still, like, in a technological determinist, like, family, I want to say, unless I'm, like, missing some subtlety in his argument. But, I mean, the basic thought is that different forms of media... like tend us toward, or have in them in some sense, like a different form of justification, you could think of it. So like in philosophy, the word epistemology just means like talking about the different forms of knowledge and forms of ways of justifying knowledge, standards of evidence, that sort of thing. And different forms of media, again, tend us toward different maybe standards of evidence, different ways of thinking about knowledge and forming knowledge individually and culturally. And so in Media as Epistemology, this chapter of his book, and I haven't read the whole book in a long time, but I've read the chapter more recently. His basic like view is that something like the written word, and this is going to come with a lot of qualifications, obviously, because we're going to talk about the written word in this episode, and perhaps the things that we talk about don't satisfy this. But his basic intuition is that the written word, especially in lengthier argumentative treatises and books and this sort of thing, tends us toward a kind of like focused way of engaging with the arguments being presented, right? Like you have to sit through, like read through the full arguments, try to like understand the internal logic of what the author is saying, and then come through that process with them at the end with a kind of like, this is why it does kind of enact on your body in a certain way, right? You have to sit and focus, and you know, it's a kind of like mindful activity to read deeply. Whereas something like television is a little bit more, you know, it's amusing. It's like quick and gets us like, you know, gets you excited. It's grabbier.
Yeah. And like one way of, I think, approaching this is thinking like, okay, like what does a book afford? For example, like, okay, I'm reading a text. A text can be like as dense as the author wants, because the reader is like in control of like the pace they read it, and they can like go back and reference stuff. So it can be as like dense and confusing because it affords for like rereading and like flipping to other pages. Whereas like television cannot present you with like the world's most dense information, because it is happening like in a stream. It paces it for you. And I realize this is like an oversimplification, and Neil Postman, I don't think, says this, but I think this is like one way of thinking about like, well, why might that be the case? Because I think we have like a tendency, or like at least I know my students have a tendency to say like, well, TikTok is actually good because, you know, you can like meet new people and all this. And it's like, okay, but we're talking more about like the actual like affordances of the the medium itself, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like with reading, I think there's a sense too that there's like a, like, I think he points to it being like kind of like dialectical. Mm-hmm. When you're reading an argument, you see references to other things, and there's a kind of like sense that you might not really know what else is going on that it's being pointed to, and you have to like go and seek that out. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe TV and certainly something like TikTok presents itself often as the entirety of the issue. Like when you watch like an informative TikTok, you know, mm-hmm. in scare quotes, I think, you know, they often present themselves as like, here's what you need to know, and there it is, like done, like quick hit, you're like in and out very
Yeah. Or even if a TikTok is like referencing something else, often like there's a little search bar in the comments where you can like click and get like the thing that's referencing immediately.
That's kind mm-hmm. of cool.
Yeah, because people will like
not so bad.
Parody, like, you know, someone does something extreme mm-hmm. or like stupid, and then someone else will like parody it, and then the search bar will be like, you know, XYZ, whatever it is, original. And okay. so then you can like click it and get the context, but you're not like having to think like, oh, what should I search? How should I find it? Anyway, that's my defense of TikTok.
Right. Okay.
Hyperlinks.
Actually, yeah. Wait, yeah. Wait. Epistemology of TikTok's great. Okay. And then another like key concept from this is, resonance, which I think you wanted to, did you have something specific you wanted to say about that?
Yeah, so he's talking about, what is it, like the resonances of various media.
Yeah.
And I just like this term for its like sound studies connotations, but also because it like speaks to like the subconscious or unconscious, which I think is important, or like I find it useful for thinking about these things, because he says that he doesn't want to talk about like how this affects the body or like mm-hmm. you know, people's minds, and rather like how different media shape discourse. But I think that in talking about resonance, like you're talking about like an unconscious like effect, because mm-hmm. something can like, you know, resound. I don't, do you know what I'm saying? Like I don't know, I'm having a hard time explaining.
Well, yeah, because it's not immediately present to you when you're either watching something or like on TV or reading it or seeing a TikTok. The thing that's, it's not being presented to you as like part of the text, so to speak, that it carries with it this sort of epistemological tendency, right? Mm-hmm. Like if anything that's happening in the background, subconsciously, unconsciously, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think what is being like, what is, you know, resonating is like a, like when we're engaging with like content and like short form video, is just like a preference or an inclination towards, yeah, like more short form video or like content. And like I'm saying content here, like as opposed to like art,
yeah,
or like, you know, thin description as opposed to thick description. So yeah, that's what I've been thinking about.
Yeah.
Resonance.
Right. And I think, yeah, the sort of, so like this is our like you know, the thing that we're using to analyze this stuff, and we've talked about a few different like media here, but I kind of want to make the case that the like the actual like medium of all of these different art objects that we've been pointing to is, at least in the sense that we're talking about it, SEO. So SEO stands for search engine optimization. And what it's like the practice of helping content on the internet be more easily searchable. So like being like optimized is a property of content, right? Like if your videos are well optimized, that means they're more likely to appear on a Google search, on a TikTok search, whatever search you're using.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously this is very desirable because nobody goes to the second page of Google. You're not going to scroll very deep on Instagram or Twitter if you're looking for something. Like you want the things that you produce to be, the content that you produce to be really easily found and in the top like three, mm-hmm. you know, things that come up in any given search. And because of the way that Google and other search engines work, like there are formula basically for what makes certain pieces of content more searchable. Things like a clear internal architecture, like visually pleasing content, content that is like other content in the past that has been clicked on and watched a lot. These sorts of metrics become really important when you're trying to get your piece optimized, right?
And so to clarify, yeah. this is like not the same as like social media algorithms. Like this isn't like a hashtag.
Yeah.
Which is like a form of optimization.
Yeah, things can be optimized within a hashtag too, though.
I see.
There's stuff that's more like if you just go to like cottagecore or something, right?
Sure. Hashtag like, cottagecore.
Hashtag cottagecore, right. There's going to be stuff that's more optimized to satisfy what trends among hashtags too.
I see.
It's not quite the same as like Google SEO, but there's all sorts of things. I used to work for a marketing company that did this, and there were people on our team who like were working on like Reddit SEO.
Oh,
like
they wanted,
yeah.
Okay.
Like stuff related to our clients' content to come up more on Reddit.
So SEO is not just Google.
No. Yeah, I know.
Damn.
Yeah, it's across. No. It can be across. I mean, it's mostly Google, right? Because that's how most people like will initially search for a product.
Mm-hmm.
But it can start to be like the same concepts that come from SEO start to bleed into like optimized and searchability across lots of different domains.
Yeah, I just thought of. I was like searching for something on Etsy a few months ago, probably like, you know, a Christmas present or something for my sister. I was like looking for earrings. So I would like type in earrings and then all the product description or like product names would be like earrings, perfect gift, Mother's Day, graduation,
yes,
birthday.
Exactly.
And it's like, damn, they're really anything you search would come up.
Right. Exactly.
So is that like a form of
Yeah, that is SEO, and it's like weirdly because Google's way better. If you did that on your website, Google would think you were spammy.
It is kind of spammy. Yeah,
but like Etsy's search isn't as discerning as Google, right? And so like it still works for Etsy creators to just like hashtag spam. But and so like the specific strategy is going to change depending on the different search medium that you're using, but the basic idea that you're trying to optimize your product or service or content for easily found via a search bar of any kind, right? That basic idea is the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have another like example question. So Netflix famously, maybe we've talked about this, maybe not, will change their widget. What's the word I'm thinking of? Like their little preview photo.
Yeah, yeah.
Depending on, like, for example, one of the professors I work with said something to the effect the other day of like, oh, Netflix always shows me gay couples, even if they're only on like in the movie for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So I like think that it's like a movie about a gay couple and him and his husband are like, oh, we want to watch that. And then it ends up not being about that.
Yeah.
And like when I see the movie preview, I would not get shown the gay couple. I would get shown like, I don't know. So is that like a form of like, how would you categorize that?
Yeah, I guess the like the algorithm, like the algorithm that is tailored to the individual user is optimizing content for you, right? And so, but then I guess, yeah, I guess that's like a weird crossover case. Cause there is a sense where like Netflix is doing like movies on Netflix are doing SEO-y stuff when if you search for like, I don't know, action movie, right? Like the top things that are going to come up are, it's tricky cause Netflix is doing a lot of like intentional internal curation too.
Okay.
But they're going to be the stuff that is just more likely to please somebody doing that search, right?
Okay.
And again, with Netflix, it's weird because it's not like a bunch of user-generated content. They're more trying to show you stuff from their library.
Their own, movies,
But like, if you do a similar thing on YouTube, if you looked up like, I don't know, action movie on YouTube or something, the things that are going to come up first are going to be maybe people reviewing like top five action movies from 2024 that are optimized in that way. So I guess
So the YouTubers are optimizing.
YouTubers are definitely doing a lot of SEO. Yeah.
Okay.
I guess it's a little different for Netflix because they're working from their own library.
Sure.
But I still think some stuff ends up doing that too. Ends up doing like SEO-y stuff within the context of like Netflix's search too.
Okay. Yeah. I think what I'm trying to just understand is like to what extent SEO like is catering to like individual users or like algorithmic, like I don't know,
in this way. So like you have like a profile of a certain kind of user that the like platform is tailoring its content for. If I'm trying to sell shit and I'm like, oh yeah, I know that this like I want my ideal customer is somebody who's into like cottage core coquette, like back to the land. I don't know, like tomato raw milk, girl. Raw milk tomato girls or something like that, right? So like you are getting at your end stuff that's curated to you as a raw milk cottage core tomato girl. But me as somebody trying to sell, I don't know, like a certain kind of like dress, right? Like I'm going to optimize so that raw milk cottage core tomato girls can find my dress.
I see.
And so all of the tags I might put on my product listing, the copy that I write about it is like, maybe I'm going to write stuff like, are you, you know, like returning.
Do you like raw milk?
Do you like raw milk? Like,
you got a stomachache?
Yeah. Do you got a stomachache?
You have botulism? You want to give us bird flu?
You want to give us bird flu? Yeah. But like, I'm going to write my content to on like, I might even like make my whole, you know, maybe I got some sort of bullshit drop shipping scheme where I am, you know, buying bulk like milkmaid dresses from China for like 14 cents each or something and then selling them for like $40. And in the in my website that I make really quickly for this, I'm just putting a bunch of copy that's like talking about, you know, the joys of agrarian society or something like that.
You do love to talk
about
that.
I do love that, yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the fact that so much stuff online has to do this kind of thing, I think really shapes the way that we encounter art. That's basically, that's what that's what we're getting to here, right? So it's like, you want... You know, what kind of person are you? Like, are you like a Black Rifle Coffee kind of guy who loves watching like Joe Rogan and that sort of thing, right? Or you're like Spotify is going to pick up on those vibes in some way or another, right? And start delivering you content artists that are tailored to, I don't know what they listen to. Like, I guess that one guy, the like Richmond, North of Richmond guy or whatever. Do you remember that?
Oh,
that
my whole God. Thing?
Oliver Anthony. Yeah. Like,
his name is not Oliver Anthony, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. like the, like they're going to know that that's part of your profile. And so those artists, right? Which, by the way, talk about literal songs, which Richmond, North of Richmond, very hashtag relatable, literal, but bullshit, stupid. But like the producers of the content are going to structure their content to be easily found by the people who are like you who want to find this stuff.
Interesting. So I have two thoughts.
Yeah.
One is about Richmond, North of Richmond. So this is a, I don't remember if we talked about this before, but for context, this is like a song that was briefly popular and it's like a far right, maybe not
it's
even
just
far
politically
right.
Politically confused, to be honest, but yeah, it's like alt-right-ish.
But it's, you know, the title is referring to like rich DC politicians.
Yeah.
So what strikes me about this is like the title is trying to be like metaphorical, or like there's just like a thin layer of interpretation that's required where it's like, what could that possibly mean?
Right.
So people like think it's deeper than it is, I feel. And I feel like that's very, you know, emblematic of a lot of culture.
It is.
So that's my first thought. My second thought is a question. Maybe we're getting too into this SEO stuff, but how is this different than network television shows, for example, using focus groups to determine like the direction that their TV shows will go, or like any, why is this like different than any of this other like optimization that popular media
I think
has
it's just
doing?
A difference in degree, not in kind. Yeah.
Cool.
It's like just it's the same principles maybe that went into that, but like times a bajillion in terms of the ability to cater to specific persona.
Okay, right? So
Persona.
So thinking about like how does this bleed over into art? What do you think?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess the reason why we were talking about Postman is because like the way that this teaches us to find things, right? It's a very different way of encountering art. In fact, like when we were talking about this before and planning the episode, I was saying it's like we're not even encountering art. Like the sort of epistemology of SEO content is like where you pick like a vibe, you name a few key, you know, markers for your vibe, you know, something like, I don't know, yeah, Richmond, north of Richmond core or something like that, right? Like libertarian, mm-hmm. like, you know, living in the woods kind of guy. I don't know why I'm thinking about these people today.
You love them.
Yeah, there's a couple in my mind that I've like created, you know, yeah. like, milkmaid dress girl, like Richmond, north of Richmond boyfriend. But like, yeah, I do love them. No, so like, that is the way that we learn how to find new content. Like, oh, what kind of movies do you like? I love like psychological thrillers with, you know, like these kinds of key, like, you know, mm-hmm. this kind of protagonist and this
Tom
kind
Cruise.
Of, yeah, with psychological thrillers with Tom Cruise. Or in the case of books, right? And this brings us back to like sort of the main thread here. Rather than like approaching it like, okay, this is a novel written, you know, it's appreciated in a few different ways by a few different types of communities and people, and you sort of walk through the door presented by the novel, right, mm-hmm. to see maybe like an invitation into the author's world or into the like way that they want to make an argument about the world. What you do is you look for relatable tags.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a romantic bookstore near us, mm-hmm. right? And at this place, the way that they've categorized a lot of their books, they have some conventional genre categorization, but they also do a lot of like, in their center tables with a lot of the newer novels, they'll categorize it by like features, relatable features, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it'll say stuff like
content rather.
Yes. Of the content. So it'll say like, you know, features like plus size protagonist, like bad boy romantic mm-hmm. interest hockey or something like that, right?
Ooh.
And like, or you could find, they have really specific one. They have mm-hmm. one that's like chronic leg pain, like werewolf fiction, and I'm like,
that both the yeah, crossover
between, yeah, there's a crossover,
there's enough in that category.
There's a lot of people with chronic leg pain, I guess.
I mean, sure, that makes sense.
I mean, myself among them at the moment, but like, right, that's and so like that is a that's like the way that these things, it's not like about the, I don't know, it's thin that way,
right? And I guess like I want to say that I understand why this exists, like I understand why people would want to see themselves like represented, like I'm not, neither of us are trying to like yeah. shit on this, yeah. I want to make that
yeah.
clear.
Well, I am, but yeah, no, I'm kidding, I'm not.
No, I know, yeah, I, yeah. I yeah. Like it makes sense, but yeah, so why is it bad? I think for a few reasons. I think like being surprised is important. I don't know. I think it's okay to like seek out things that you think are familiar sometimes, or like things that you think you'll find relatable. Like that's great. I understand that. But yeah, I think it's important to be surprised by fiction. I don't know. I keep thinking of that Fran Lebowitz quote, a book shouldn't be a mirror, it should be a door. And it's like okay to want a mirror sometimes.
Yeah,
like,
I look in the mirror.
If the only
gotta
books
do a fit check.
Right. But if the only books you're reading are about like werewolf, chronic leg pain, romance, then you're like missing out on a lot of the human experience, I think. Or like
right.
I don't know. I guess it depends on what you think like the purpose of fiction is. And this is something I've been thinking about. Someone described fiction to me like recently as a reality description project. And I think that's half true, I guess. In that like, yes, you do want to like convey your reality, or like what is your reality? You want to give the feeling of mm-hmm. what is your reality. But I feel like so much contemporary, like popular fiction is really just like reality replication,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. when it should be something more like reality distillation. Like you shouldn't be like replicating
yeah.
your existence or like your reality exactly. You should just be like trying to get down to like the idea of something. And that's why I said I like allegorical books, so maybe I'm just like biased.
I think that's right.
Yeah,
I actually have in my notes here that like porn is the clearest example of this, and I think this is like a, I mean it's like a much more extreme sort of dichotomy, but you might think about like the distinction between like dating somebody and watching porn, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like in like when you're just masturbating and watching porn or reading porn or whatever the case may be, right? Like you are just looking for what you demand, right? Your things, you're really into, you know, whatever it is. and I was gonna start naming stuff, but let's not worry about that. Like whatever specific niche you're into, whatever vibe you're into, if it is like chronic leg pain werewolf porn maybe or something, right? That's what you demand. But when you meet somebody and date them and like learn a new person, right, like one is immediately confronted with the fact that you can't do that, right? You can't just tell the person, can you please be like a werewolf for me with chronic leg pain. Like, mm-hmm. you need like a degree of like interest and empathy, mm-hmm. in being invited into their world and seeing what they got going on over there and learning to like that, right?
Yeah, there's more friction.
Mm-hmm. And I think the same is actually true even in media consumption. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, what you're doing is like you're reading somebody else's like communicative effort, right? About the way that they've distilled their reality. And mm-hmm. when it's too masturbatory, you like lose out, I guess, on a little bit of the opportunity to, you know, be invited into a different door.
Right. And so maybe we should read this werewolf book.
That is a different world.
Yeah.
I actually think, yeah, if you don't have chronic leg pain, if you're not a werewolf.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm just like worried that we're like being haters about, like, we've chosen this like category to poo-poo, if you will, which, yeah, like, yeah, isn't what we're trying to do. But I do think that another thing I'll say, like, with using these like key terms and such, like, that to return to this idea of like the SEOification of art, mm-hmm. I think that this, like, you know, economic landscape or like marketplace like demands, I don't know, like, yeah, thin description, or it endorses it. I don't know. I'm thinking of like Colleen Hoover, mm-hmm. and how she has a million books, or like Sarah J. Maas. She has like a bajillion books, it seems. And I don't think this is like bad necessarily. Like, genre fiction, like romance and fantasy is always like that, where like people just like pump out the books. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know what my point is.
Do you want to offer us perhaps a taste?
Yeah, I do. I'm a Colleen Hoover hater, you guys.
Yeah,
and
that's
I feel like I've been trying this whole episode to be like, yeah, we don't want to hate on this.
I don't know why.
We don't want to hate on this. But I do want to hate on Colleen Hoover because I think it's bad. But maybe this will give you an idea of why I think it's bad. So here's a quote. People say you fall in love. But fall is such a sad word when you think about it. Falls are never good. You fall on the ground. You fall behind. You fall to your death. Whoever was the first person to say they fell in love must have already fallen out of it. End quote.
That's facts.
That's facts.
That is facts. That's crazy.
That's so like, crazy. I don't know. I worry. I hear so many like criticisms of, you know, criticism against romance novels, where people are like, oh, like, it's misogynist, like, to criticize romance novels. Like, oh, it doesn't take, like, women's pleasure seriously if you're, mm-hmm. so critical. But
yeah,
this shit's bad.
Yeah.
Well, and,
it's actually very thin, because it's just playing with the word fall across a few different instances instead of thinking about, like, I don't know, maybe the sensation that the phrase falling in love is trying to evoke, or, you know, something, like, a little bit more...
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
you can't like, what about falling leaves? That's beautiful.
Oh yeah, that.
What about true. Fall as a season?
Oh my
you're
god,
you're telling me that's bad.
Yeah, you're telling me
falls
that's
are
bad.
Never good.
Falls are never.
Well, that's a different context, but
right.
Yeah. Still, and again, I think that there's like a time and place for this. Like, I don't know. I'll admit, I've been watching Bridgerton. I started mm-hmm. reading a Bridgerton book.
Mm-hmm.
I only read like 10 pages.
They have
of
a Bridgerton
it.
Book.
It's based on a series of books, on
oh,
a series
really?
Of romance novels. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't take women's pleasure seriously
right.
is my problem.
That's what's been revealed.
That's really,
you can't read.
I can't read, and I don't take women's pleasure seriously.
Yeah. Okay, here's another Colleen Hoover quote that I think is so funny. If I were a carpenter, I would build you a window to my soul, but I would leave that window shut and locked so that every time you tried to look through it, all you would see is your own reflection. You would see that my soul is a reflection of you. And, okay, this is very Richmond north of Richmond, because, like, it's explaining the metaphor so much. It's like, it my soul, like, what the yeah. idea is, my soul is a reflection of you. Like, right. okay, that's a little, like, for me anyway. Yeah, codependent, I don't know. sure. Or that's a little, like, tenuous.
Sure.
On its face, but then you have to, like, build a whole, like...
If I was a carpenter, we'll start there.
right.
Yeah. Oh,
if I were a carpenter, I might be doing my construction and fall to my death.
Right.
That would be the same as being in love. like, yeah. I don't know.
Right. Well, you know who else was a carpenter? Okay, no.
Exactly. I was thinking that too. Jesus.
Yeah,
if you didn't get that.
That's what we were talking about.
to make it clear.
Right. Yeah. And so, well, we're not talking about Jesus, though. We're talking about...
Colleen Hoover.
No.
well, Mother Mary.
A similar writer, Jorge Luis Borges, mm-hmm. the famous, is he Argentine, I think?
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. We thought we'd finish with the short story On Exactitude in Science, which, well, what made you want to talk about this?
Well, I can't really talk about it without, like, spoiling it, but I'll spoil it.
You want me to read it?
sure.
It's one paragraph.
Sure. Microfiction? Yeah, is that what it's called? Micro?
Maybe.
Micro short story?
Well, it's not macro.
Sure. Anyway.
In that empire, the art of cartography attained such perfection that the map of a single province occupied the entirety of a city, and the map of the empire the entirety of a province. In time, those unconscionable maps no longer satisfied, and their cartographer's guild struck a map of the empire whose size was that of the empire, and which coincided point for point with it. The following generations, who were not so fond of the study of cartography as their forebears had been, saw that that map was useless, and not without some pitilessness was it that they delivered it up to the inclemencies of sun and winters. In the deserts of the West, still today, there are the tattered ruins of that map, inhabited by animals and beggars. In all the land, there is no other relic of the disciplines of geography.
Suarez Miranda, Viajes de Varones Prudentes, Libro 4, Capítulo 45.
That's facts as well.
So this, I mean, to spell it out, y'all heard it, but to spell it out, this is like about this group of people who make a map that is so precise that it is like a one-to-one scale of the world.
Right.
And in thinking about like fiction, contemporary fiction, or like contemporary media as like a reality, replication project, that's why I was thinking of this story. Like the use of the map is, you know, distill the most important information. Like, this is where the road is, this is where the mountain is, this is like the height of the mountain maybe,
right.
And to just like replicate it exactly is to like make it useless,
right.
And so it strikes me that
you as it is in the story
and so it strikes me that this is like what so much like contemporary media is doing, because it doesn't get at like the heart of things or like the feelings of things. It's just trying to show you the feeling without like this quote from Colleen Hoover, like about falling in love. Like what she's trying to get at is that love is like painful or whatever. And instead of like, you know, actually telling us a story that could get at this, she's just trying to like describe it to us. And this is like ineffective. It just feels like, I don't know, it made me think of the one-to-one map, I guess.
Yeah. I think that's right. The other point of like a map is to sort of like create like themes and symbols that are guides to the variety found. And so that you can like, you know, identify across a few different, somewhat different instances, a sort of unifying characteristic. You know, that's the point of like abstraction, is just to pick out something important and then allow you to use that feature of, you know, something of like general,
mm-hmm.
that feature shared by in general by many different things to understand even more things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe there's a way that like good fiction, really well crafted music, you know, like emotionally rich and thick stuff gets you deeper into life in a way that lets you understand its variety better than a simple list of everything that ever could be.
Right. Yeah. Like a map can tell you how to get to a place without showing you
the entire place. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, there should be interpretation and, I don't know, experience. So yeah I think that's,
yeah,
that's that.
Right. I tried to read a little bit of, I didn't try to like sincerely.
A Court of Thorns and Roses.
Yeah. But like,
I read the
first
book.
Oh, you, yeah.
Yeah.
Not good?
No. I don't know. Yeah. I see why people like it. Okay, here's what I'll say. It's entertainment. Like,
yeah,
it's entertaining.
It's entertainment.
That's
how
why
spicy
I feel about...
is the spice?
Like, not? I don't know.
We're not
like
getting full
smooch.
Penetration descriptions?
No, I don't. Do they? I don't think in the first book. I don't know. I like don't remember, so like obviously it wasn't.
Yeah,
but yeah, I like entertaining
me
books
too.
I like Bridgerton.
Oh yeah,
new rest of the season comes out tomorrow. I'm gonna download it.
Okay.
I don't think the season is as good because they're, I don't know, they're kind of doing this stuff.
Yeah,
but
I think it's too woke.
Bridgerton?
Yeah.
Oh my god, stop. No. Shonda Rhimes is going to come and stab you.
Like,
otherwise murder you. I don't know.
Yeah.
So what's the solution to all this? This like this is a gripes episode.
It is
again.
A gripes episode again.
Where's the hopefulness?
Well, you guys got to go to church.
No.
No, I'm kidding. I don't.
I was
going to
say some
not...
books are good, but
some
you wouldn't
books are
know.
Good. I wouldn't know. Yeah, I'm just, yeah. Well, I've been reading nonfiction. I've been in my nonfiction era for maybe 10 years now.
No.
And I need to return to fiction.
Oh, here's what you should do. I told you before we started recording that it's Karl Ove Knausgård's summer.
Yeah.
His book is like nonfiction. It's just like a detailed account of his life. But what's so interesting is he's just like describing his life. You might think, oh, this is, what did I say? Reality replication.
Right.
No. Because he's getting to the heart of the matter.
Right.
His relationship with his father.
Right.
He's talking about death.
Yeah.
His ponderings, you know.
Right.
This is beautiful.
There is, you know, there's a really, I was thinking, this kind of looming in the background for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to talk about it today. But it's an interesting question that we could get really deep on, or somebody could, like, why is it that certain, like, why is it that whatever Nausgaard's doing is getting at the heart of the matter in a way that, like, you know, if I was a carpenter, I would make you a box to live in or something, doesn't, you know, like, what
sentence structure? I don't know. If I had the Nausgaard in front of me, I would just like open it up and like read
and
two
it would
sentences.
Just be eminently clear.
Yeah. If you hand me that, I'll find something. I've never read this book. This is my struggle book 4.
I mean, the real difference is that this was written by a man.
Yeah, that's like it. Okay, here's an interesting passage. I just opened this. This is page 304 of my struggle 4. Okay, Dad started undressing.
Yeah.
I turned away. I had never seen him undress. I had never been in the same room as him before when he was doing something so intimate. Sitting on the bench, he folded his trousers, rolled his socks in a ball, and undid his shirt. I felt myself getting hot and flustered, didn't know where to look or what to do with myself, because now he was taking off his underpants, and for a few seconds he was completely naked. I had never seen him naked before, and a shudder went through me as I cast my eyes over him. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
What a crazy passage. But that's like, I'm curious to know, like,
right.
Why was he so, like, disturbed?
Right.
Like, this is just, like, describing what happened. Why is this better than the Colleen Hoover passage I read?
Yeah. Well, I think because at least at that, it's doing like a little bit of an interesting, like maybe many people have had a similar experience of just like accidentally, you know, encountering intimacy that you're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's more interesting than just like, yeah, you know, we've all been in love or like, I don't know, all been like horny for somebody such that it feels like our soul is merely reflecting them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, it strikes me that like this thing that she's trying to describe is... that Colleen Hoover's trying to describe is so total. Like, it's, like, something so large. And she's trying to distill it down into, like, five sentences.
Right. That's right.
And this is, like, the type of thing that you need, like, an entire book to dissect. Karl Ove Knausgård, I don't know, he stays talking about his dad, you know? Yeah, because it's like a massive subject. If you were just to like write like, oh, me and my father have a complicated relationship because I don't feel very close with him, yeah, it would be like, okay. Yeah. Like, that's not evocative. Yeah. That doesn't like stir anything
right
in me. There's like no, there's no like moment of recognition.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that seems right. Anyway. If I was a carpenter, I'd build my dad a closet so he could change in there. And I wouldn't have to see his naked ass.
So stupid. All
right. All right.
Whatever. Whatever. On that note.
Cool. Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll see you next time we do one of these.
Yes, in 5 months. We actually don't speak outside of this. Yeah. How have you been? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. We gotta log off. Yeah, wait. Yeah, congrats on your, you got Dr. Riley now. So thank you. That's good job.
That's PhD. Me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, see you in heaven.
See you in heaven. I'm selling my soul. I'm working all day. Overtime hours. Bullshit pay. So I can sit out here, waste my life away, drag back home, drown my troubles away. It's a damn shame, but the world's got a tune for people like me, people like you. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not. That would be insane. I'm not gonna do that. Yeah, that's fucked up.